We need to talk about social media. What was supposed to connect us with our friends and with new people from all over the world has turned into echo chambers, endless scrolling, targeted ads, and platforms that do God knows what with the data they gather on us. Seems like there's room for improvement. But what would a better social media platform actually look like? That's what we're looking into today with my guest, Jane Im. Let's go. Welcome back to CISPA TLDR, the podcast of the CISPA Helmholtz Center for Information Security, where we talk about cybersecurity and AI without the buzzwords. I sit down with the researchers behind the work to get clear explanations and make sense of what they're doing. I'm Tobias Ebelzhäuser from CISPA's communications team. And trust me, I'm not a computer scientist either, so I'm learning right along with you. Today we're going to talk about social media. Looking at the state of it today, it makes you wonder, have we squandered that opportunity of real human connection across the globe? How can we fix it? Or instead of fixing social media, what if we redesign it from the ground up? That's exactly the question CISPA faculty Jane Im asks herself in her research. So I invited her here. Hey Jane, nice to have you here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Jane, you joined CISPA only recently to work in human-computer interaction, as you call it. So what exactly does that mean in practice?
So yeah, human-computer interaction is a fairly broad field that I'd say is just anything about how people interact with technologies in general. And so it can be about coming up with novel technologies to augment those interactions, or it can be about understanding how people use these technologies and the problems that happen when, for instance, people use social media.
Okay, so social media, there it already is. I think that fits perfectly into your field because I think there is a lot to be talked about, like when it comes to how we interact with social media. So let's dive right in, I guess. So what first got you interested in social media systems as a research topic?
Yeah, I'd say it has to do with my personality, I think. So I think just as a person, I find a lot of meaning in communicating with different kinds of people. And so when I first got to use Facebook, I remember being just mesmerized, I guess, by the whole technology and thinking, wow, this is so cool. Like I get to see these different kinds of posts from different kinds of people. Mm. I first learned about programming on the Facebook feed. So someone, I don't remember who, shared a video about programming. And I was like, oh, what is this? And then actually, so I was a business major student back then. And when I watched that video, I was like, huh, maybe I should learn programming. So I guess the time, like compared to now, Facebook had a lot of diverse and interesting content back then. And so I remember, you know, scrolling my Facebook content feed almost every day. And so I'd say that experience during my undergrad, I think, definitely impacted my decision to pursue human-computer interaction.
So it's fair to say without social media, you would not even be sitting here.
Maybe,
right now.
maybe.
Okay, so you say you were like very mesmerized by it in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Was there a moment when you realized, okay, something about this is not working?
Yes, but there was one like big aha moment actually during my PhD. So interestingly enough, back then I had Twitter. Now it's called X, but I deleted my account. Back then I had a paper about online harassment. And actually, so I posted on Twitter thinking that, oh, I want to, you know, tweet this so that other researchers could learn from it. And then I remember this account, like it wasn't a researcher. It was just a random dude, a guy, quote tweeting my tweet and saying something kind of toxic. So it was basically kind of in a demeaning, bullying manner. And luckily that account didn't have a lot of followers. So it didn't, you know, attract a lot of interest. But I remember thinking, wow, like this random dude just made a pretty mean comment about my research. And I can't literally do anything about that tweet because it's his. But in reality, you know, that quote tweeted mine. So I thought I should have some kind of say over what he has posted because it originated from my post, right? Yeah. But I had zero control over it. And luckily, not a lot of people engaged with that tweet. So it just faded away from my memory. Yeah. But that was one experience that really, I think, made me realize that, wow, many users really don't have a lot of control over how their post gets to be shared online and how they want to interact with others. So that was, I'd say, and it was pretty kind of funny because, you know, that the post was about my research on online harassment. And then there's this random dude, you know, quote tweeting it in a demeaning manner. So I thought it was kind of funny. So
ironic,
that was,
yeah.
That was one aha kind of moment, I'd say. And another more, I guess, professional experience was when I interned at Meta right after my third year of PhD. And interestingly, I got placed to a research team that focused on online behavioral advertising. And so, of course, I can't say much because I signed an agreement with Meta to not disclose too much.
Yeah,
but what I really realized was that Meta is, in a sense, an advertisement company. It's not, you know, at its heart, it has to care about revenue from ads, which is what the company cares the most, instead of how they design technology for communication. I think that internship experience really made me think hard about the current state of social media.
Okay. Current state of social media, perfect headline, I think, for this podcast. So looking at like the biggest platforms today, we don't really have to focus on one specific one, but what do you think are some of the biggest design problems with them that make it hard to be, as I said, like that tool for connection in the world that it could be, but it's kind of not today.
Right. I think the biggest issue is that control for users are only considered after harm happens. Mm-hmm. So I think if we fundamentally redesign social media, designers would have to think, oh, how do we design it so that users are safe and feel empowered in designing the interactions that they want to have? But nowadays, tech companies, you know, say in a public statement, oh, like we'll care, we'll think more about the harms that our users face. Mm-hmm. And so control becomes an afterthought for users. And I think that is the biggest issue that I think kind of leads to some users feeling just that social media these days are just incredibly toxic and end up disengaging. And I'd say that's the biggest issue.
So you would want to have users more individual control about what exactly, like who can see their posts, who can interact with their posts?
Yes, to give one, I think, concrete example, like connections or relationships on social media platforms are treated almost equally the same. You know, there's like friends, followers, connections, right? Yeah. And well, it's true that on Facebook, you could say you're in a relationship or you're like a relative of someone. But aside from those, you can't really tell the platform what kind of relationships you have with different kinds of people. Mm-hmm. There should be a way for users to communicate to that platform saying that, oh, I want to interact with these kind of users in these ways as compared to other users. But right now, as you can see on the majority of social platforms, all of the connections are mostly treated the same. So that's one concrete example.
So I think on Meta, so at least on Instagram, you can put like a close friends list for your stories, but it's like not very fine grained at all.
And I would argue that users are probably more open to having those somewhat more complex and nuanced features than majority of the platform's designers think, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So because I think the way people initiate and maintain relationships, they are used to thinking about it in nuanced layers, right? Like sometimes relationships change and sometimes you get to know someone and develop a friendship with them. And so people, I'd say, are already used to maintaining different kinds of relationships in a nuanced way. I think technology should be designed in a way to help people do that on social media as well.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of look at it through a sense of, like, let's call it a user agency.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So giving the people more control and making it easier for them to control, because I don't really use Facebook any much anymore, but like even when I recall using it, there were a lot of like privacy settings, but I'd say I'm quite tech savvy, but although I'm not sure if I even understood all of them because there were so many things to set, and there's always like something to be said about making it actually easier and usable for the people.
Right, right.
You know, so give us some concrete examples. What do you think should a or could a social media platform of the future do to give users more control about their data?
Yeah, first I'd say is more granular visibility control. Mm-hmm. So like, for instance, I could imagine a feature that says something like, oh, I'd only want to show this post to someone who has left a comment on my post for during the past 6 months or something. I think that could be maybe a good indicator of a friend or a follower being, I guess, regularly interacting with you enough so that you feel comfortable to post something to them. So that's, I think, one. The first is more granular visibility features. The second, I think, is having more well-developed moderation tools for online communities. So, for example, in one paper, I was not the lead author on it, but we interviewed moderators on Reddit. And one theme that kept emerging was that Reddit moderators, they are already a great pool of volunteer moderators on Reddit who are really, you know, invested in keeping the community safe and healthy. Yeah. But what they lack are tools that actually help them get the job done. And I remember many of them saying they wished Reddit, you know, the platform would invest more in providing moderators with the tools. So I'd say, yeah. Visibility, more granular visibility tools, and the second is moderation tools for moderators.
So you could argue that actually the developers of the platforms or the platform providers, they should be held accountable to actually, you know, give the users opportunities to control data, to make it a safer space online. But as you said, that you kind of noticed in your internship at Meta, that this might actually be a little bit against their business model, right?
Right, right, so right.
Is it the issue, the technology itself, or is it more like just stemming from the business model that they have to make money with as much content as possible and caring about as little moderation as possible?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's both. So definitely, I think the business models end up impacting what gets prioritized by platforms in terms of design. And so, like for online behavioral advertising, these platforms need to get views and clicks. Mm-hmm. And based on my internship experience at Meta, they have these metrics that they need to prioritize and in order to ensure that they get enough revenue from these online behavioral advertising. And so business models, I think, play a big part of these issues. But I also think the design definitely matters. So even, you know, if you say that these platforms are backed by subscription models and they have enough money, you know, if the technologies aren't designed properly, then I don't see those issues going away.
Okay. So you said something about subscription-based. So you could imagine that there could be social media platforms that work differently. What would that look like?
Yeah. So I would first want to say that, interestingly, my gut feeling is that many users are very resistant to subscription models. Yeah. And I kind of blame it on the fact that so many users are used to online behavioral advertising. But I actually think subscription is the way to go in the future, in my opinion. And I think maybe this could be part of digital literacy education, but I think more users need to be told that, you know, if you need to pay if you want a healthy communication and social media system. And so I definitely think more companies need to be considering alternative business models, such as subscription models. I think ultimately companies could be trying to have a combination of different business models. And one, I think, dominant one is definitely subscription models that I've just mentioned. And like, if you think about it, users, you know, they pay for Netflix, right? Yeah. Right. So if you think about it slightly differently, you know, I think it's actually reasonable to tell users that, hey, you know, if you want to experience a safe and more empowering space on this platform, you need to pay a bit more, a bit, so that, for instance, those resources could be given to moderators, for instance, to provide them with tools. Yeah, so I think definitely subscription models is the most promising way to go, in my opinion. Although I would guess many users would be resistant to it. Yeah. I would also want to say, I think it's important, though, to have like a tiered system.
Yeah.
I think majority of the platforms being like offering the first tier to be free for all users, I think would be good, because there are obviously people who cannot pay. Yeah, and so for them, in order to provide them with some basic means of communication, I think giving some kind of free version is important. But also then I think there is room for paying for, having users to pay for certain features. And this is actually a study that I'm currently trying to do, where my collaborators at the University of Michigan and I are trying to run a large-scale survey to understand how people perceive different kinds of social media business models. So I don't have the results yet, but like, for instance, in the study, we're trying to ask how do users perceive a freemium-based social media platform or a subscription-based social media platform. Or, for instance, a platform could be also making money by using users' data for training AI models, for instance, externally licensing them, right? So,
which a lot of platforms are already doing.
But I think what's kind of missing in the research landscape is understanding how users, you know, perceive them. I think experts, like including me, we all have our opinions, but I think what I'd be actually interested in is how do users actually perceive these kinds of business models?
So backing it up with data.
And I think it could provide, you know, some interesting points for companies to consider when thinking about their business models.
Okay. What I think was pretty interesting, you always called it online behavioral advertising. Can you say a few words about what that actually means?
Right. So I think I should be more clear, but there are different kinds of advertisement models. And so online behavioral advertising, I call it OBA. And so OBA is the predominant business model of Meta, Google, etc. And so this kind of model requires platforms to harvest a lot of data from the platforms and track users. I think the important part is that it requires tracking users across sites and apps. So in a sense, these companies end up harvesting a lot of data about users to target ads in a very fine-grained way. But there are also advertisement models that don't require that much data. So for example, contextual advertisement is a type of advertisement where you place ads based on the content, for instance, the topic of the topic or tone of the content. So it doesn't require companies to harvest massive amounts of data. So I actually think we're now very used to OBA, but in theory, I think if a platform sticks to models like contextual advertisement, I would guess that it would cause less issues in terms of toxicity or hate speech, for instance.
But of course, it's probably not as effective, right?
Right. Yes, exactly.
So for the advertiser, for the company that wants to have their advertisements
that is true.
Being...
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. So again, there's this incentive for platforms to actually optimize for engagement rather than for, I don't know, let's call it well-being or for actually to have a healthy community. I predominantly use Instagram and so often I see content that I do not like, you know, because it's just, I don't know, maybe they call it rage baiting today, you know? It's just the content that I think, okay, why is this showing up in my feed? But then maybe it's my own fault because then I just keep looking at it. I just, by that, you just kind of feed that algorithm show you stuff that you basically just do not want to see. But you don't really have a choice. Okay, of course, you can like scroll through the menu and tell Meta to actually do not show you this content anymore. I guess my question is is social media kind of fixable in that sense, if it is optimized for keeping us mm-hmm. scrolling as long as possible mm-hmm. And seeing content, engaging with it, even if we do not actually want to.
Mm-hmm. I think I have a pessimistic view on yeah. that. So if platforms, you know, keep online behavior advertising, I guess I'm pessimistic about how it would be able to fix those rage baiting or toxic content, because yeah. For, you know, companies, they have these quantitative metrics that they end up prioritizing, like how many views did posts get or how many clicks did the posts get. And so when you quantify that, then you can't really easily, it's hard to say that, oh, if we keep pushing healthy content, then instead of the rage baiting ones, then, you know, the metrics will probably go down, right? Yeah. So yeah, I tend to be pessimistic when I think about if you keep online behavior advertising, it would be hard to fix those issues in the long run.
Okay. So you propose looking at social media through the lens of consent. Mm-hmm. What does that mean exactly?
Right. So to me, it means that, so my research is about ensuring that users have, especially vulnerable users, have meaningful agency in deciding how they can have interactions yeah. online and what happens yeah. to their data on these platforms. So consent to me is a concept that ensures that people, even the most marginalized and vulnerable, have full agency in deciding whether an interaction can occur. So when I explain this, I often talk about sexual consent, because if you look at the history of sex education, mm-hmm. you know, consent is it's an important concept for educating people that, you know, only sexual interaction can happen if you ask for and obtain consent from the other person yeah. who, you know, especially when you think about gender, women tend to be more vulnerable than yeah. men. And so men, I think, tend to be more educated that you need to get the consent of women before yeah. sexual interaction happens. And so if you apply that line of thinking to social media platforms, it means that users who have less power than companies, their consent needs to be respected by companies. Mm-hmm. And going even further, those who tend to be more marginalized, like women of color, for instance, their consent needs to be respected on the platforms, which means that, you know, if they don't want a particular interaction happening, like a random dude, you know, for instance, messaging them,
or
right?
Sharing your research.
Yeah,
tweeting. Sure.
Yeah. To them, you know, they might not have not thought much, but if the woman user does not want it to happen, then, you know, they didn't give their consent. So it shouldn't happen. So that's what I mean by respecting users' consent when designing social media.
What do you think, who is like currently most affected by these mm-hmm. practices at social media? Let's call them toxic practices, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I think that is fairly fair to say mm-hmm. by these practices today.
So I mean there are like different populations, but I tend to think that first, women and other gender minorities tend to get impacted by the lack of control and harassment, for instance. So the Pew Research Center, I think, had an online study that showed that 1 in 4 young women in the United States experience online sexual harassment. I think it just shows that compared to men, women and other gender minorities often tend to be the target of these sexual harassment. And mm-hmm. there are just inadequate tools to prevent that from happening in the first place. So definitely I think about the gender aspects. Another group of users that come to mind are more racially underrepresented groups on social media platforms. So I think these populations tend to experience racist or hate spreading mm-hmm. comments or see those kind of hateful content on social platforms that aren't easily moderated by algorithms or moderators in the first place.
So would you argue that like the fact that hate speech and like, let's call it rage baiting or everything that like general, like fringe views getting mm-hmm. amplified on social media is mm-hmm. a byproduct of that these algorithms are optimized for engagement to actually sell things and make money? So is it just an mm-hmm. afterthought?
Mm-hmm.
And
In my opinion, yes. Although I do, I would be very doubtful that Meta and like Google, Meta would publicly release the results or metrics online. But in my opinion, yes. So I think the algorithms tend to amplify hateful content. And so as a result of that, the populations who are often the target of those hateful content, I think, experience more harm than than others.
Okay. If you were to design like your ideal social media platform, how could and would you change these things in general? I mean, we've talked about giving users more fine-grained control over how who can interact with their posts, who can see their posts. What else would you implement that would help people have a safer online community?
Right. I would personally be interested in finding ways for users to customize the content feed algorithms. So currently, you know, when people go on to Facebook, they don't really have a way. I mean, Facebook does provide options like, oh, do you no longer want to see any content like this? But that's a very passive way to influence the algorithms.
Yeah, that's what I talked about earlier.
Right.
Like hidden behind three different steps. And
exactly. But I think it would be interesting and more beneficial to the users if they could actually actively shape the algorithms that recommend content and other users on the platforms. And of course, I think it's so one thing to be careful about is based on my experience, when you ask users what they want, sometimes they don't know.
Yeah.
So there should be, of course, like options in place, but which don't, you know, which are far from rage baiting. So, I think giving users ways to customize the algorithms would be one of the things that I do if I were a designer. Yeah.
Okay. But you kind of are, because you already built a social media platform for research purposes. Maybe tell us a little bit about that. How did that look like and how did it work out?
Right. Yeah. So the platform's name is Moa, and it's essentially, it was a social platform for PhD students to share their online experiences, share their advising experiences. So for instance, if they experience an advising issue, it's very hard for PhD students sometimes to find the right person to discuss
it. So advising issue being like your supervisor.
Yeah. And so I actually did an interview study as a side project. And what I learned is that while PhD students have networks like their lab mates, for instance, it can be sometimes hard for them to decide to whom to disclose their issues with their advisor, because, you know, it's a very power laden context. And what I found interesting was that many participants said they don't want to talk to their lab mates because they don't want it to go back to their advisor. And so I thought it'd be interesting to build a social media platform that lets PhD students write their experiences, but selectively decide to whom to show to. So basically the algorithm here was that users were able to say things like, oh, I only want to show this post to users with a certain trait. And this certain trait could be highly customized, for instance, based on a gender or race, or saying things like, I only want to show this post to those who have experienced microaggression, for instance, from their advisor. And so when the users sign up the platform, there's a process where they tell the platform about themselves. And so on the interface, I wrote that the more you tell the platform about yourself, the more content you can see that other people. So if you tell more about yourself, then it makes it other people to selectively choose the post to you, the intended audience. Yeah. And so actually it works. So all of the users who signed up actually mentioned at least something about themselves that the other users could use to decide to whom to show their content to. And so
basically like targeting ads.
But instead it's like a fine-grained targeting in terms of content.
Yeah.
So the platform was pretty successful in the sense that users started to write pretty sometimes vulnerable content that you probably can't imagine telling a lot of people non-anonymously, but but through the platform, actually, users were starting to share pretty sensitive content about their advisors or their lab mates. And I think the fine-grained, the customization, I think, definitely helped with that. And so, I think in terms of the content feeds, you know, of course, it wasn't that exciting compared to Facebook, where there's a lot of different kinds of content. But overall, users were pretty, I'd say, engaged. And so because as a researcher, I didn't want to bias the participants. So what I told them was, you know, try to just use it as you see fit. Like, I didn't want to coerce anyone into using the platform for the study's sake. And so, but many of the participants mentioned saying things like, oh, I wish MOA could, you know, could continue in the future. And so now I'm a faculty member, and so I hope to revive it, but I haven't had the chance so far.
Okay. I thought it was especially interesting that you said about that, like, people were sharing vulnerable things because they knew only a certain aspect of their, let's call it demographic, were be able to access it. I think it raises the point that like, not having fine-grained control like you do now on social media, it just kind of also invites self-censorship. So you will not, as you said, you're not going to share your thoughts that you maybe would share, but you don't want to share it with everyone.
Yeah. I think one participant put it really nicely, and what they said was, MOA is different from Reddit, where, you know, you only rely on your anonymity. So, you know, you just could create fake accounts, but you really don't know who's out there. You know, you really don't know who, what kind of people are actually in the audience. And so that causes some users to, you know, hide their true thoughts and not be fully vulnerable because they don't know who the audience is. But in this case, of course, on MOA, users also don't know each other's identity, but they know some parts of it. So I think that's one reason why some people ended up becoming more comfortable in disclosing their thoughts.
We already talked about algorithms. I mean, it's a whole different kind of worms. We probably could, like, invite other people from CISPA and do a whole episode about algorithms in social media. But what do you think, what role should they play in the future? You talked about, like, customizing them, but do you think they're, like, the most important part of a social media platform? Because it's usually in the public discourse, a lot of people talk about algorithms, but
that's a great question. I think you need to be precise when you say algorithms, but I think I'm guessing when you say algorithms, you're talking about the more sophisticated recommendation algorithms,
I think that's people just call it social media algorithm in the public discourse, but probably it's the content recommendation algorithm.
I as a researcher think, isn't it fine if, you know, I personally think as a researcher that it's fine if the social media platforms if they are a bit boring, you know, if we didn't have that much of sophisticated AI and machine learning algorithms to recommend content, there are other plenty ways for users to engage with each other online. That is my personal take. But then I think it's also true that the general public are so used to these sophisticated recommendation algorithms that I guess what I'm worried about is if healthier social media platforms mean that there's less provocative content that are recommended to users, what if users, you know, end up thinking that it's too boring for them? And so there's this element of education that needs to be also I think users also need to be educated about this because, you know, nowadays so much young people are using social media platforms from when they're, like, you know, not even 10 years old. So I do think we're kind of going into a direction where people, including, you know, parents, need to be educated about these social media algorithms. And so my hope in the future is that the general public could understand how these algorithms can be exploited for targeting hateful mm-hmm. content, and that sometimes algorithms that look boring are actually more, you know, beneficial and healthier yeah. in the long run.
Okay. So considering all that, what do you think? Are social media platforms even incentivized to change anything at all at this point? Or is that something that also like policymakers need to mm-hmm. be involved in and mm-hmm. have a say in?
Yeah, that's a great question. I definitely think policy plays a big role, especially in terms of data privacy because to be honest, when I was a PhD student, I was more optimistic. But now I really think that companies are not going to change on their own.
Yeah.
So considering that if Meta and Google, for instance, their business models are not going to change, then I think it's only regulation that could enforce changes to these companies.
So when you were like an optimistic PhD, you went mm-hmm. to Meta, to your boss, and you're like, okay, let's change this.
So, well, yeah, I remember like having discussions with my manager at the time. Yeah. Like I actually made some mock-ups of some designs that I thought, oh, it'd be really cool if Meta could implement these. And I remember showing it to my manager and collaborators. And I mean, they didn't laugh in my face, but I would probably guess that they were like, oh, this kid, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, so yeah. Cute.
Yeah. Yeah.
So naive. Yes. So young.
Yeah. But I actually think, you know, those I think it sometimes helps to be naive, you know. Yeah. Even if companies there are a lot of papers out there that recommend design ideas that, you know, companies don't actually implement, but I think it's better to have those out there because you never know. And I forgot to say this, but you know, policymakers aren't researchers.
Yeah.
So I think it's important for the research to be out there in case, you know, policymakers need some kind of research to back up their policy.
They also need to be able to understand, you know.
Right.
If we remember this very famous interview of Mark Zuckerberg in the American Senate.
Yeah.
And it showed that they had no idea
how
this actually works.
Yeah, know? Exactly.
They had no idea where Facebook gets their money from.
Yeah.
How anything of this works. So yeah. I guess it's not only the users that need education, but also the policymakers,
definitely.
If they are to be expected to actually.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So yeah, I think we need more researchers talking about these problems. And just like I'm talking today on the podcast, I think having communication on, I don't know, other kinds of platforms to discuss their research, I think is important.
Okay. Summarizing what you think better social media platform could look like in the future, giving people more agency, what happens with their data, who sees it, who can interact with it, giving users more customization options on what their feed will recommend them mm-hmm, to you, like mm-hmm. these famous algorithms as they're often talked about, and also like reconsidering the business model. Should we be able to, I don't know, pay for less toxic content in our feed? Which is kind of this topic in a sense, but I guess it's, I guess it makes sense, you know, mm-hmm. to get these engagement-driven algorithms off your back
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and then just paying it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that makes sense. Okay, then thanks a lot for all these amazing insights. We have a tradition here. There are mm-hmm. always 5 quick questions before our guests can leave.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. the first one for you is, what is your actual favorite social media platform that you use?
That's such a difficult one to answer. I say I really used to like Twitter,
mm-hmm.
but now it's sad that, you know, it's X. And
yeah.
So I ended up deleting my account after, you know, Elon Musk acquired
that
the
whole
platform.
Takeover thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd say Twitter in the past. Right now, I'm really not so sure. Like I no longer log on to Facebook. Instagram, I sometimes use because my sister is on there. Mm-hmm. So I guess these days, I was actually in the mode of just thinking about these large tech companies. But I'd say KakaoTalk, you know, is a Korean messenger platform. And I guess these days I'd say KakaoTalk. They've actually implemented some interesting changes. And so over the past years, I'd say they really expanded from just being a messenger system to a more like holistic social media platform. Mm-hmm. And it has other features as well. So yeah, I guess these days I'd say KakaoTalk.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I've actually never heard of it because probably in the Western Hemisphere, it's
not used. Yeah,
it's so interesting because there are so many social media platforms.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean that we kind of have our echo chamber in that sense, I guess. As well.
Yeah.
Okay, but I think the second question kind of goes in the direction: mm-hmm. Do you ever still doom scroll or get lost in reels?
I do, but I kind of go back and forth because I deleted Instagram for quite a long time. Yeah. And so during that period, I didn't doom scroll at all.
So your screen time went down.
Yeah, it went down. And really deletion helps. Yeah. But then my sister kept telling me that she found a bunch of reels that she wants to show to me. And so I ended up installing it again.
It's the social pressure.
Right. And so whenever I install Instagram again, yeah. I do notice that the doom scrolling time goes up.
But I can say for myself that I'm quite guilty in that sense, because I always keep telling people that don't use Instagram. Like, I wanted to send you a meme, but I couldn't, please. Yeah. Because it's like very important to send all of your reels to all of your friends.
Right.
When you think of them, it's probably a new sort of interaction that mm-hmm. our ancestors did not know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. If you could change like right now, one mm-hmm. social media feature, what would it be?
That's a hard question because I guess I would have a lot to say. If it was one, I'd say just on any platform like Facebook, LinkedIn, or Instagram, I wish there could be a way again to just easily target a specific group when posting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's either completely private or completely public or only to friends. But oftentimes there are some people among my friends or followers network who I wish didn't see the post that I don't want to post. And so I wish there were some features that let me specify, like in terms of maybe using how frequently I've interacted with them or the topics that they tend to post, for instance. So mm-hmm. using those features to specify a group that could see my post, I think would be one.
So you'd say of all out of your like improvements for social media, that mm-hmm. would for you be the most important one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think I would probably be able to post more.
Yeah.
If I had that. Yeah.
Okay. It's interesting. Mm. What social media feature that, I don't know, is implemented in some platform today should have never made it out of a brainstorm meeting?
Okay. So this is not a specific feature, but correct me if this is not the one that you want to hear, but I'm just so shocked about the post on Instagram where like people, you know, what do they call it? The glasses, the Meta glasses
The VR glasses.
And the users are just easily able to post what they scan on the streets.
Yeah.
And I just find that so privacy invasive that like, I don't think many people would know that their faces are being posted on Instagram.
We've actually had an interesting paper mm-hmm. here at CISPA, from the Usable Security mm-hmm. Group. They did mm-hmm. an interesting paper mm-hmm. on that. And I think it was even like a version before. I think they're now even more sophisticated AI features mm-hmm. and all that. But even then, people, like, they couldn't tell.
It was a
very, very small LED light.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's just the worst. Like, I think it's so stupid. But I say that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally understandable. Mm-hmm. I would not want to be in a reel that someone films with their glasses.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, like last question. Mm-hmm. What would you recommend to users today, like without mm-hmm. changing anything?
Mm-hmm.
What can they do now, small steps to get some agency back on platforms? Mm-hmm. Is there mm-hmm. anything specific you want to recommend to people? I mean, of course, it depends mm-hmm. on the platform, but...
Yeah, that's a good question. I wish I had some scientific proof to back this up, but I'd say based on my personal experience, I've been very careful. I've become more careful in deciding what to post, especially in terms of images. Mm-hmm. Because nowadays with generative AI development, I bet these platforms, you know, are using the posts and the images to, you know, better train their models. So, and okay, this is maybe a side rant, but
I'm always here for side rants.
I am just sometimes very surprised at how parents upload images of their children. Mm-hmm. It's like, you never know who's seeing it. Mm-hmm. So I don't have children, but I guess just one word of advice to parents is to think carefully before you post something about your child online, because, you know, there could be predators, you never know. And I think what's concerning is that your child, they can't consent.
They don't have the agency.
Yeah,
in
they
that
don't have the agency. Yeah, yeah. So I think being more careful about posting pictures or videos of children, for instance, would be mm-hmm. one thing.
Okay, Jane, thanks a lot. I think I've learned a lot about how social media could be better in the future. Mm. I sure hope it will make it there, supported by your research.
Thank you.
Yeah, keep on digging into that, and maybe you will be the developer of the new platform that we all use one day.
Thank you. Yeah, maybe. Fingers crossed.
Thanks a lot. See you around. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that wraps up this episode of CISPA TLDR. A huge thank you to Jane for joining us and giving us a glimpse into how a better social media platform could look like in the future. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast app and maybe leave us a rating or review. It helps getting the word out about our research to even more listeners. I'm Tobias Ebelshäuser. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with more stories from the world of cybersecurity and AI made simple. Until then, take care.